This Stu Lectures episode features food illustrator Anna Koska, recorded live at the global event in Cardigan, West Wales in 2016.
I was going to aim to talk to you about doing one thing well, but I thought it was total bollocks because that's not what I do. Because what I do, in truth, I do a lot of things badly. Like, a lot of things badly. And I wanted to sort of invite you into my world, my life, my little home, and just for the next 10 minutes, take you through my life, as it were, as a freelance illustrator. And it started like this. We've got three kids. We live in the middle of Sussex. We came from a tiny little flat on the outskirts of a really busy town. And we had the grand scheme of letting our kids run riot through, you know, fields of clover and planting things. So we moved out of this little tiny flat with sort of window box herb garden to a lot of space. And with that space, we thought, well, you know, you've got to do something really practical. Let's have a vegetable garden. So we, instead of doing a small little plot, we decided to go really big and greedy, and we built one the size of a tennis court. And with our toddlers, we brick paths it, our little kids, you're on the floor building these brick paths, which is like an ice rink in the winter. It's like the biggest mistake you could ever make. It's don't ever brick path, the vegetable garden. Very Sarah Raven, totally impractical. So we've made so many cock-ups. Over the last 15 years, I've de-slugged, sown, and dug these pitches. And by the end of each year, I look at it and think, God, what the hell was I thinking of? You know, we have deers bouncing the fence and having midnight raves throughout the sweet corn. I've planted seeds, very carefully, lovingly watered them all, thinking, they're going to be amazing, only to find the seed packet still full in the greenhouse, unplanted. I've planted overwintering broccoli in May and waited for this, it to produce mighty florets of broccoli for nothing to actually happen, and ripped them out in October with total disgust, so only to reread the packet that said overwintering broccoli. So a total cock-up all round. But at the end of the day, when I'm feeding all the pheasants, I've planted just about enough to feed all the wildlife, the pheasants, the jays, the pigeons, the deer, and I've got just about enough at the end of the day to feed my family. So I'm kind of winning, but it's taken 15 years. Is this working now? The next obvious stage from planting a vegetable garden was to do the sort of self-sufficiency thing and get chickens. And they were meant to be totally free range, and they really, really are. This is one in our bedroom. And they like to admire themselves in the full-length mirror and chat meaningfully with the person looking at them. And chickens is a whole new game. And we've had the occasions when we've left the flap open for the fox to dine and whine at his own leisure. We've had mass invasions of red mite where I've literally blow-torched the whole coop, thrown away the clothes and bathed in Dettol. Every morning is like an egg hunt where I have to beat the dog to find the egg because they're free range, and it could be in my daughter's bedroom amongst her soft cuddly toys. It could actually be really cheeky in the dog's bed and the dog hasn't sussed it yet. But we have just enough, and we managed to cook, and I managed to actually use them for painting, which you'll probably hear more about later on. So the next step, really, you know, you've got free-range chicken, free-range cats, dogs, free-range children. The logic would say that we need something else. So this year, we've got pigs. Wonderful. Not really. Within 2 days, they'd escaped and they took us on a wild sort of half a marathon around 9 acres of neighbouring woodland. And after 2.5 hours, we managed to pick these squealing morsels up, throw them back in their fenced-off area. And we've come to sort of a dodgy understanding that as long as I supply them with ample quantities of food and little treats of banana skins and apple cores, they'll be all right. But the interesting thing about this is it's one more thing I thought I'd have a go at. And the main reason is because I thought, you know, we really enjoy meat, we've got a bit of space, we should actually take some responsibility and see where this all started. So they haven't got names, and next week they're off to slaughter. And I've got a friend who's a butcher who's going to teach me how to joint and process them. And, you know, we may never want to eat pork again. You just watch this space. You'll see it on Instagram if you follow me, my thoughts on it, and you may be getting a lot of sausages sent your way. Yeah. We'll just see what happens. So it sounds like I'm kind of telling you all the things I do, and aren't I wonderful? I'm really not. I mean, if you came into my house, you'd see that it needs hoovering, the carpets look disgusting, it's dusty. I'm always having to rewash the washing that I washed 3 days ago, but I left in the washing machine and forgot about, and now they've gone mouldy. It's a bit chaotic, but I do like to have a go at stuff, and I think that's what I'm always wanting to do. I always pick up another plate to spin, whether I should or I shouldn't. It's kind of, I want to have a go at it. And so the next plate I picked up to have a go at spinning was something which was probably the most biggest challenge ever. And that was taking on 150,000 bees. And I've checked out the one in the corner, by the way. They're really cool, they're feral, and they're perfectly safe. So you can go walk around, it's totally fine. If you know there's a whole colony living on the corner of the building. But keeping bees, the reason I started this, and it was quite a strange thing, my grandfather used to keep bees, and he died. And it was something I was always really intrigued about. And then I had a really dear friend, and he'd done all the training, done all the courses, he'd got all the gear. We used to sit and talk really enthusiastically about this whole thing of keeping bees, and you know Mother Earth, and how incredibly good it was. Good for you, good for the environment, good for the ecology of our planet. And he'd even worked out exactly where he was going to put them in his garden. But sadly, he died of cancer. He lost his battle, and all his hopes and dreams were just extinguished in that one point. Excuse me. And so, at that point, I realised I had to cut the gauntlet. You know, there was no choice about it. So I thought I'd keep bees. And the first year, we killed the colony. We put it in the wrong part of the garden. It died of isolation, starvation. Second year, they all swarmed, and I was so proud because I caught the swarms, and then I was told, actually, you shouldn't have let them swarm in the first place. And I'm in my third year now, and I am learning, and it's an honour to be a guardian of bees. And I'm producing honey, or I should say, actually, they're producing honey. And I've actually got 8 little pots to hand out at lunchtime, if you come and find me, but you've got to answer this question. The question is this: what's the job of the drone in the hive? Okay? Come and find me and tell me. If you get it right, you get a pot of honey. So that was there. And collecting little things. I do like collecting little things. And so this is kind of symptomatic of this, is that I also like to collect shells, stones, driftwood. I was brought up on the north coast of Cornwall, and so any opportunity I could to fill my pockets, I would, with these little things. But that's very much about what I do. I like little things. I like the details in little things. And so when I illustrate, what I'm trying to do is capture. I feel compelled to capture and portray those things that we often don't know why we like it, but we're pulled towards it. It's like the blush of a plum, or the loose scale on a beautiful sardine, or the hole that's been drilled into the side of a mussel shell. It absolutely enthralls me. It's everything that that appeals to me and why I illustrate. And being brought up on the coast, I spent as much time as I could there. But the one thing I could never do was surf. Can't even get off my knees. I'm useless. So at the age of 24, I learnt to kite buggy. And this just opened up a whole universe of possibilities. And together with my husband, we drove and flew around all over the world trying to find disused Air Force bases, really hard, flat surfaces to go and kite bugging on. And we spent months away, but ironically, the best place we ever found to kite buggy was here in Wales at Pembrey Sounds. Awesome, so fast with your bum, you know, 4 inches off the ground. And the reason I'm showing you this is because this is something I did before children, before I had to worry about things, before I thought about consequences. And now I'm 49, I'm thinking, you could kill yourself. Good, you could break your backside, you could crash, But I'm picking it up again. I'm having another go at it, because although it's really scary, and I really am shit scared at doing it again, it's something that makes you feel alive. You've got to have another go, even if you make a complete fool of yourself doing. And that's something I'm very good at. I'm always curious, and I'm always game to make a fool of myself in the process. And I think you've kind of got to do that. Otherwise, you're not living and you're not learning. And so this is where I introduce you to this beauty. My husband made this bike for me. He hand-built this beautiful steel frame. And it's probably the most touching thing anybody has ever done for me. Gobsmacking. And here I am riding it. This year, I'm going to have a go at building a bicycle for him. And I've never built a bicycle, but I'm going to have a go. And my biggest concern is the possibility of not getting the right number of triangles and mixing up the head tube with the seat stem or whatever they're called. But it's something I'm going to have a go at. It's something I should have a go at. Even if I cock it up. And it doesn't matter. And I suppose that's what I'm trying to say. This, where are you, Tom? Your fault. Entirely your fault. My husband, 4 years ago, bought back this beast in a jar. He said, I've got you a new pet. So he said, stick your nose in there. So he flipped the lid and I stuck, this is like baby's nappies, cow poo, fresh grass, all welded away. He said, it's sourdough. And I used to be really proud that I've always baked bread. I always have, and I can do it, I think, to quite a good standard. And then I was presented with this challenge of, now you're going to make bread with this living, breathing item. And the reason I'm showing you this is because it's been a four-year journey. I'm still absolute rubbish. This I'm proud of, but what you don't see and what I probably should have shown you is the little flat, little hard rocks that I still produce. And my very kind family, with great humour, still eat, and they still say they enjoy, a bit chewy. And my son calls flying saucers and said they bake very good pita bread. But, you know, amongst it all, of having a go and doing all this stuff, life does get a little bit full on. And we all crave a bit of time out. And my time out is running. And I don't run for miles. I run literally to turn down the peripheral noise and just think about the stuff that really matters now. Not the stuff that I should be doing or haven't started or haven't finished. And it's that plodding along, aquaplaning on the old pocket of leaves that allows you to that sort of freedom, that liberty of time and space. And my best planning and execution in my head of ideas happens when I'm wearing a cloak of sweat and I'm sifting mud through my socks. So this is really very much my life. It's got lots of elements to it, and I honestly can tell you that none of those are wholly successful, and at best they offer me sort of transient moments of sheer joy. At worst, they are literally swept quietly into a corner and dumped in a bin for recycling. But this is me. This is what makes me me, and I think it allows me a certain insight and empathy into what makes other people happy and feel good. And really, that's my remit. As an illustrator, I strive to create art that ignites a happy moment in someone, the recipient of the art. And it might be the blush on the plum that they've just picked from the garden and popped in their mouth and they want to recall it. It might be the sardine that they ate in a really small cafe on a really small part, in a really small port on, you know, on the side of France or something. Or it might be a shell that their child gave them as a toddler for safekeeping, and they put it in the pocket, and 15 years later, they find the shell, and their child is no longer a child, and they've gone off to do their own thing. So I do a lot of things fairly randomly, not particularly successfully, but I think it allows me to do just one thing well, and that's paint.
The Do Lectures is here to share stories of remarkable people in the hope they will inspire you to go and do amazing things too. There are over 300 talks to listen to, or if you prefer, watch on our website, thedolectures.com. Hit the subscribe button on your favourite podcast platform to get the latest episodes when they come out.